The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, around the Delaware Valley, welcome to the Paleo Wellness Hour with Sonny Banks. We've got a fantastic show on WWDB Talk 860. We're sponsored by Tony Shore and Pinnacle Medical Plus. How are you today, Sonny?
I'm doing great, Joe. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. You know, lots going on. I'm really ecstatic to have the guest that we have on. He's no stranger to the broadcast.
He's not. He's been on before, and it's nice to have him back.
Absolutely. I want to bring into the broadcast Todd Schoenhaus of Eisenberg, Rothweiler, Winkler, Eisenberg, and Jack. How are you, Todd?
I'm doing well. Good to see you again, Joe, and of course you as well, Sonny.
Thank you.
Lots to talk about, but before we do, if you will, just remind our listeners a little bit about yourself, your background, your path to where you are, in other words, and of course the firm.
Sure. So I'm a partner at the Eisenberg Rothweiler Law Firm here in Philadelphia.
Oh, wait a minute. He gets to say the short version.
No, we had to test you, Joe. I know. And you did a great job, by the way.
You didn't mess up.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well done.
Everybody got some props. Love it.
So for the past 10 years, I've focused exclusively on catastrophic personal injury, representing injured victims who are plaintiffs in lawsuits. In order to get to the point I'm at now, I took a bit of a windy path. I started actually on the defense side. And for 15 years, I was a lawyer in two different law firms and practiced commercial litigation, complex litigation, and some personal injury, and was a partner in a big law firm, and realized that my passion was actually representing injured victims. So in order to do that and get into court and present cases to juries, I needed to switch to the plaintiff's side. I did that 10 years ago and haven't looked back since. And it was great. It's very rewarding. To get compensation and justice for injured victims. So when I say we represent catastrophic people, catastrophically injured people, it's really anybody from a young child all the way up to an elderly person and their families when they die, because we can bring what's called wrongful death claims. And it really covers the gamut from products liability to dangerous premises to medical malpractice situations, to vehicle accidents, to civil rights cases, and I can certainly talk in more detail about that. But really, any way someone gets catastrophically injured and the injury is caused in whole or in part by other people, that's what I'm doing.
And just so our listeners understand, a catastrophically injured client is someone who suffers a serious injury, more than, you know, a soft tissue injury or a sprain and strain type injury, correct?
That's right. And the way I describe it is a major injury that has some sort of ongoing and permanent impact on someone's life. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you die, you're not living anymore. That's the most extreme. Short of that, we handle a lot of paralysis cases, quadriplegics, amputation cases, traumatic brain injury cases. Those, of course, are going to be the most catastrophic. But there are plenty of other injuries where someone's ability to work on a regular basis is impacted, their ability to enjoy life is impacted, even if they're not necessarily suffering from those other injuries I just mentioned.
Sure.
Todd, what area did you grow up?
So I'm from South Jersey. I grew up in Cherry Hill. I then spent 7 years at the University of Michigan. So I'm a big Wolverine fan. Go Blue.
So you must have been psyched this year when they beat Ohio State.
Extremely psyched.
Right?
Yes.
I don't think I've ever seen, by the way, not to kind of go on a tangent, but I don't think I've ever seen a more passionate celebration than that one. That I was like, even I was jumping up and down. I'm going, I don't know what's going on here, but yeah.
Agreed. It was a magical day. They had our number, so unfortunately, but we finally got him back. And of course, Sonny here, being a Villanova fan, you know, Michigan didn't fare well in Final Four against Villanova some years ago. But anyway,
we can still go on with the show. I mean, yeah.
We can. Sure.
We'll find some common ground,
especially for my end.
Right. So after 7 years in Ann Arbor, I returned to Philadelphia, and I've lived and practiced in town for 25 years now.
And the firm, very successful firm. And in your area of the law, it's extremely important to for a firm to have the resources to fight the insurance companies who have unlimited resources, who are often lined up, you know, like it's a movie, you know, the old boys club on the other side, and you got the, and you know, David and Goliath type situation. But you guys have, you know, you're not exact, you know, you guys level a playing ground. You have the resources to fight for your client, on behalf of your client, those big corporations. Tell us a little bit about that, number one, and the importance of that, and of course, the firm and the culture at the firm.
So your observation is exactly right. The type of cases we're handling, we're typically litigating against large companies or backed by large insurance companies who have the resources to fight to the bitter end. And when we take a case, we only do so if we're prepared to take it to trial. And to do that, it comes with a lot of expenses: court costs, deposition costs, expert witness fees, investigative costs. And we as a firm front all of that. We don't ask the clients to go out of pocket. That's our cost of doing business to support the case. And then if there's a recovery, we can get reimbursed that. But in order to invest in the case and really be behind it, we need the resources. And fortunately, I'm with a firm and I have terrific partners. We're about 10 lawyers. A lot of the name partners of the firm, Eisenberg, Rothweiler, and so forth, have held and occupied leadership positions, both in the Philadelphia Trial Lawyers Association, Pennsylvania Trial Lawyers Association, which is the Pennsylvania Association of Justice. I know, Sonny, you're involved in PTLA and on the board. My partner, Dan Jack, is 2 years ago was the president of the organization, and several of them before that. So it's important to work with good people who are courageous, who are leaders, who go to fight for people, who have good relationships with defense counsel and the judges. And we handle cases certainly with a focus in Philadelphia, in federal court, but all throughout the state.
And being respected not only by those that you mentioned, but also, you know, by the defense firms who understand that you're willing to go to distance.
Sure.
And that, to me, how long has the firm been around?
So the current iteration of the firm has been around years before me, different iterations of
sure.
it. So Stuart Eisenberg and Ken Rothweiler, the two immediate founders, have been practicing law for decades.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, in other words, you're walking into a place who has the experience and the respect and the resources to go the distance. I find that, and that's really important to note, because people who get injured, in many cases, it may be, and we all hope, but you know, maybe the first and maybe time ever and only time they ever get injured. They can't afford to make that mistake, to walk into a situation where,
yeah, we've said many times, Joe, you don't want a dabbler when you know you suffered a catastrophic injury. You want somebody, you know, who has the experience and you know, has the resources, like Todd's firm, that are prepared to go to bat for you.
And that leadership at the firm, talk about that in the context of where the, you know, how the firm got to where it's at. Because people that I get amazed when I see plaintiff firms that are that successful and that professional, and
because it immediately begs the question, where do you get your clients? Where do your clients come from?
Right. So you address two points there. One, where we get our clients. Clients are, of course, the ultimate client is the injured person. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we get contacted by the injured person or a family member. But more times than not, our clients come through other lawyers, be it someone like you, and I'm sure we'll get into it, a lot of synergy that our practices have and how we can work together to benefit a mutual client. Could be my colleagues from the defense side, could be smaller personal injury lawyers who get
don't
the cases.
Don't have the resources.
Exactly. Right. Don't have the resources, the skill set, the wherewithal, you name it, and they refer it to me, my firm. That's how we're getting these cases. And reputation matters. And
it must, because I don't see, you know, Eisenberg Rothweiler doing a lot of mass advertising, TV, you know, radio, billboards. I don't see that.
That's correct. And not to slight other firms that do. That's mm-hmm. just not our business model.
Yeah.
And the other thing I wanted to mention, sort of give a shout out to Dan Jack, because it is very important. He served as president during the first full year of the pandemic. And as you know, Sonny, keeping the courts open was a hard task and a primary focus. And he worked closely with the Philadelphia Bar, the defense lawyers, and Philadelphia was ahead of the curve in getting courtrooms back open. So injured victims like our clients and others could get into court and have judges and juries decide their cases.
And I say that because, and you mentioned, I'm assuming also that, you know, other individuals who have gotten hurt in the past that you've represented refer other clients. In other words, you know, that you've done a good job from them. There's no better, bigger form of, you know, flattery than other attorneys like a Sonny Banks end of the case or somebody who you've already represented whose relative or friend has gotten unfortunately injured in one of those ways and has been treated really well. That's got to be a big deal. And does that happen?
That happens a fair amount. You're absolutely correct. One of my best sources of business has been a lady I represented years ago who we resolved her case. It was a medical malpractice case in Montgomery County. And honestly, we are lifelong friends. And she looks to, I know her children. Anytime there are things that go on in her life, she shares with me. I've met family members of hers, including other plaintiff lawyers, who one of which is a cousin of hers, who is one of my best sources of business. So the results, the loyalty shown to clients pays dividends in the form of other clients. And you're right, that's the best form of, I guess, flattery, as you say.
Yeah, I mean, no question about it. You said you grew up in the Cherry Hill area, which is obviously the Philly area. How important is it to know your clients and you know, understand the region and, you know, have them be able to relate to you and vice versa?
It's very important. The ultimate goal is to...
Because they call Cherry Hill, it's Washington Township. It's like little South Philly. But I'm just saying that, you know, you might as well be from Philly if you're from Cherry Hill.
Right. Exactly. So essentially, other than 7 years in Michigan, I've spent my whole life, and I had a big 50th birthday about 6 months ago.
He's just a kid, Sonny. No. I know. Just a kid.
Congrats, by the way.
Thank you. So whatever that is, 43 years in this area. And like I said, I've been in Philadelphia for 25. And having the pulse of the community and understanding how to relate to people and what would sell to a jury. Because at the end of the day, we're telling a story. We know that if we have to try a case on behalf of clients, we're going to have, like you said, insurance company backing, good defense lawyers and big companies, and they have a job to do too. And there are always two sides of a story, and they're going to put up a defense. And a lot of times our clients are blamed for injuries and for accidents. So a lot of the focus of my practice is to convey through the evidence that's accumulated and telling a story to a jury that the plaintiff, the victim, doesn't bear responsibility for his or her injury. Or if he or she does, then it's minimal. Because thankfully, Pennsylvania has what's called the 51% rule. And not every state is like that. A plaintiff can recover in Pennsylvania so long as they are not more at fault for the injury than the defense. Some other states have a 50% rule. If a plaintiff is 50% at fault, equal to the defense, no recovery. Hmm. And then there's some variations. I think there's about four states that are pure contributory, that if a plaintiff is even 1% at fault for his or her injury, no recovery.
Wow.
That's why Pennsylvania is a great place to practice.
Sonny, I don't think we've been doing these legal radio for about 7 years, and I've never heard one person ever say that.
Me either, Joe.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
But I'll be using that on the next show. You can bet on that.
There you go.
But you mentioned a couple things there. Well, first of all, being from the area and being able to relate to your client, also a jury of your peers, okay? And there were some federal trials that they call a jury of your peers, but these people are from Lancaster and all over the place. So they're listening to a South Philly guy talk on the phone, right? That's, you know, or you know, one of my friends or an iron worker. That ain't a jury of your peers, mm-hmm. brother. I mean, they're looking at you like you're from outer space. But in your area of the law, Todd, a jury of your peers, if it's a Philadelphia area injury, is that? Is it important to be able to relate to that jury and kind of understand what that, you know, Cherry Hill grandmother or that South Philadelphia, you know, son or whatever, the, you know, the people, to be able to relate to those people?
It's extremely important to be related to those people because as a lawyer, I'm the first person that's going to stand up in trial to speak to the jury after they're assembled. When the judge says, Mr. Schoenhaus, you can make your opening statement. This, well, actually, even before that, when we pick a jury.
Yeah.
Picking the jury.
Voir dire.
Voir dire, exactly. So you have a room assembled of potential jurors, and the judge says, Mr. Schoenhaus, you may stand up and address the jury, introduce yourself. The first thing they're going to hear out of my mouth is how I speak, what I look like, my accent.
Yo, what's up?
Right. So, believe me, trying a case here in Philadelphia gives someone like me a lot more comfort than, you know, if I was in Nashville.
Yeah, I mean, plus just knowing the landscape, Joe. I mean, you know, you mentioned, you know, a place like the Hospital University of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Not everybody knows how large of a facility that is.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, what kind of deep pockets necessarily are there,
yeah.
You know, when you're in a litigation situation,
and also having that defense of experience. You know, a lot of great attorneys like yourself have had that. That you come out of, and by the way, I think it's almost like essential in some cases because you're 24 years old, 25 years old when you get out of law school. Who wants to hire? I mean, you're raw. I mean, that's where you're cutting your teeth, right? Mm-hmm. And you get some experience there. You come out, you know, you're obviously, you know, mature, and does that experience really help you in the process to be able to relate to your client and say, here's the situation, we've been through this before, not to mention the experience you have and, you know, with the partners and all that and the years you have in, but that defense, at least at the beginning, had to be priceless.
For me personally, it has been priceless. The relationships with the defense lawyers, kind of anticipating their moves, understanding that it's all part of the process. Mm-hmm. Things, I'm not really surprised at seeing things anymore because I was probably the guy who was doing that before.
Yeah.
That's not to say it's required. Certainly a lot of my colleagues didn't take that same path, but I certainly think I am a better lawyer all around and a better plaintiff lawyer now for my background and experience on the other side for about 15 years.
The role models. Okay, you mentioned you're 50. I never would have thought over 40, Sonny. He looks good, man.
He does.
it's a radio theater to mine, so, you know, having said that, mentors, role models on the way up in your path, I'm assuming some of the partners at the firm were mentors that you know, helped you get to where you're at.
Absolutely. I'd say just on a personal level first, and Sonny knows my dad. My first role model is my dad.
Awesome.
He was a doctor, but he was an expert witness, did a fair amount of expert witness work in medical malpractice cases, both for plaintiffs and defense. But a real professional, a hard worker, taught me the importance of relationships, doing the right thing, and making a difference for other people. First and foremost, that comes to mind.
Awesome.
I certainly had mentors over the years in the other firms and I became a plaintiff lawyer. But certainly at my firm, I had the opportunity. Let's give you a quick example. One thing I'll never forget, I had the opportunity to try a case before the pandemic. This was maybe 4 years ago now, for a guy who fell through a skylight. It was a roofer. He survived the incident. He had that's a catastrophic brain injury. Could needs help with all activities of daily living. And that was a month-long trial in Philadelphia against the tenant of the building and the landlord of the building. It was a commercial building that had skylights on it. And the skylights weren't covered. And I tried the case with two of my partners, Fred Eisenberg and Ken Rothweiler. And Ken Rothweiler first chaired the case. And he's somebody who's had the opportunity to try, if it's not 100, it's well over 50 jury trials over the years. And just seeing him in action and the instincts he demonstrated and the tactical decisions and the way he related to the jury, I'll have lessons from that that I'll always have with me.
Wow. And I'm looking at the name of the firm. It sounds like those guys are pretty high up in the firm. That's Eisenberg and Rothweiler.
Exactly.
And as a result, and having had that opportunity, okay, now you're in that position, of leadership, a partner at the firm. You have the inclination to pay it forward when there's a young attorney coming in, or somebody's got, kind of bug-eyed when they're walking in the office, and obviously that's paying it forward. That's how the firms at that level get. Talk about that, and even if they're with law students or young yeah. people in general.
So I'm very mindful of the case I just mentioned. We tried in Philadelphia, and the law clerk on that case, after she finished her clerkship, the 2-year clerkship, she went and worked for an insurance defense firm here in Philadelphia. We were looking for a young attorney to join us. And the moment she saw our firm name, her eyes widened. And she looked up to us, seeing how we tried the case and how we related to the jury and the judge. And she jumped at the opportunity to switch from the defense side to the plaintiff side. She's been out 3 or 4 years now. She's doing great work. And I view it as taking her under my wing a little bit. I'm always trying to pay it forward. I'm always mindful of that. We also hired a summer intern.
You hired that woman?
We hired her. She's great. A full-blown associate at the firm, doing great work, Jessica Collier. And then we have a summer intern who's a college graduate who's going to Drexel Law School in the fall, very interested in law. And I'm overseeing his work. And on a daily basis, I'm always mindful of trying to teach him and her the way I was taught. Because like you said, posterity matters, right? It's
yeah.
Like paying it forward.
Yeah, no question about it.
And that's one of the beauties of the Philadelphia legal community. We are close, regardless of which side you're on. And it's special because that doesn't exist everywhere.
Really? I mean, right. And is that with the personal injury and the workers' comp? Is there, because I know that I've heard that the workers' compensation bar is, somewhat, intimate, and
oh,
even
yeah.
though we're in a
I
big
mean, the
city.
Comp bar is very cordial. I mean, because we see the same attorneys all the time. So you're not going to, pull the wool over anybody's eye.
When you say, close, are you talking about that the defense attorneys, are they involved in that conversation? Or?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm friendly with most of my opponents.
Okay.
I've been doing this for, over 35 years, so you tend to know everybody that's practicing. Plaintiff personal injury practice is a little different because you see more new attorneys than you would in comp, but I still get that same feeling, being on the Philadelphia Trial Lawyers amongst most personal injury attorneys. They get along great, even though that they're from different firms.
Well,
they're always willing to help one another.
And I find I've heard a number of stories where attorneys met their partners or whoever going against one another.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard a lot of individuals, especially plaintiff firms where it's a successful plaintiff firm, and somebody's really good or on the defense side, and they may be young, and next thing you know, they're like, you know what, we got something for you here. If you ever decide to leave, I hear those stories a lot.
That's true. And also, coming back to what we talked about some time ago, is the referral lawyers. How do we get our cases? I've had a number of cases provided to me through defense lawyers, because who better knows what kind of lawyer I am than someone who just experienced it from the opposite side?
You see, if I was a defense attorney, I'd be looking for the worst. Listen, I got a case for you. I want to give it to you, and I'm going to wipe you. That, I'm just kidding.
Right. Except if that person you're giving you is that defense lawyer's family member or friend, sure. They want to put that person in good hands.
That's a great point. That's a great point. Now, I hear the same. I do hear that those stories where a defense. That's a great point. Having said that, I mean, when you're dealing with clients, some of the things you hear. I mean, just not with clients, but just in general. People's biggest complaint about their attorneys is the communication and all that. And you hear that on TV, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. I know you guys are very attentive. Talk about the setting, when a client comes in, to your office for the first time, and setting expectations for them. There's ebbs and flows. These cases, even if they're catastrophic, don't happen overnight. The insurance companies, like, you talk about their businesses, they have responsibilities, and their responsibilities are, obviously not to just be giving money away, no matter how obvious it is. Talk about the, what happens when you're setting expectations in regards to communications, bedside manner, and the ebbs and flows. What's that meeting like when a client comes in for the first time?
Right. So when a client's coming in for the first time, this is their life. Yep. Like, for me, obviously, and Sonny, we have jobs to do, and we care immensely about our work. But at the end of the day, it's not our injury. It's not our life. It's the client's injury, the client's life. And a lot of times with these physical injuries comes the emotional aspect of it. These are people who have lost relationships, can't interact with spouses the same way. They've lost parents. They've lost children. A fair amount of my work involves, unfortunately, sex abuse cases. Yeah. We have kids we're looking into who are abused in foster care situations. These are kids who are afraid to talk, rightfully so, understandably so. So it's a big deal for them. It's important who's in the room when they're talking for the first time. In a case like that, I understand that I'm not going to get all the information up front because I have to earn their trust.
Right.
I mean, yeah, they're coming to me and there's a level of trust already. But maybe I'm meeting them for the first time. They may sign, or a family member may sign, the agreement for us to represent the victim. But it is going to be a process, and communication is very important. And as far as expectations, it's all the more important now. It's heightened with the pandemic because things take longer. Money is tighter, mm-hmm. right? So, and the type of cases I'm dealing with, here in Philadelphia, we have different tracks. So you file a lawsuit, and if it's a simple two-party auto accident case, one guy's in a car, gets rear-ended by another guy in a car, injuries aren't that catastrophic, you're going to be on pretty much an expedited track. And that means you're going to have a certain amount of time to conduct discovery, learn information, take depositions, and then you're staring at a trial date. You could be in a trial pool, or you can get called for trial at any point. Those aren't my kind of cases because these are, as I said, more complex, more catastrophic, multiple parties. So, but the client doesn't necessarily understand that. And the client may be getting advice from a friend, a girlfriend, a cousin who says, wait a minute, you should be getting your check.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. In a couple of months.
The guy from McDonald's got his check, the coffee right. spilled on him.
Right.
Or I was in an accident and I got paid within a couple of months.
Yeah. Right.
But what's amazing is setting that's exactly the conversation I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So that you don't, so your client doesn't become their own worst enemy. And can actually get through this trial and actually participate in it, or not the trial, but the case, because these cases can last 1, 2, 3 years, and that initial meeting, like you're talking about, is a big part of it.
Right, and clients don't necessarily know all that goes on behind the scenes to put their case together, because they have the initial meeting, and then there are times. There are natural intervals throughout the life of a lawsuit that we'll have to talk to the client. But in between that, I may be doing a lot of work on the case, and the client doesn't necessarily know it. So it's my job to keep the client informed, and staff helps with that. We have paralegals and assistants. And it's very important because I always tell the client right up front, there's only a couple times in a case like the kind I'm handling that they'll have to be public and outward and speaking about a very traumatic experience. Their deposition, and for our listeners who may not know that, that's when you have to sit down and answer questions posed by the other lawyers. The parties in the case, the defendants, have a right to ask the plaintiff questions, and the plaintiff has to answer those questions under oath, with a court reporter taking down the answers and transcribing it, and a record is created of it. And that's incredibly important because that could be played to a jury at trial, at least here in Pennsylvania. So they'll have a deposition and then trial. Other than that, they don't need to appear for anything unless we, you know, decide to have a settlement conference, right, or what's called a mediation. But everything else gets handled kind of behind the scenes. And so that's something also that I hope I do a good job of conveying to clients.
Yeah, and in those complex cases, I mean, there really is no status or updated status, you know, 30 days out. It just doesn't happen. I mean, those cases take a long time, so they really need to develop. They need to be seasoned. And I tell my clients, listen, we're a team, so I've got a job to do and you've got a job to do. Your job, obviously, is to make sure that you continue treating and you get as well as possible. My job is to litigate your case and to maximize your recovery. And in order to do that, I, you know, can't be on the phone every 30 days about a late check. That's why that, you know, we hire exceptional staff here at Banks Law that can answer those questions for you so that you have the answer that you need, rather than not being able to get me because I'm out, you know, doing things on your case that are critical.
Well, and yeah, we're going to blow through the break here because we're having too much fun. You know, that's important so that you talk about, so the person doesn't self-destruct. They're
sure,
already
sure.
A nervous wreck probably if they can't work, if they're going through, the family situations. You talked about the roofer that fell through the skylight. That's traumatic enough, rather, you know, of course things don't always go as you want, mm-hmm. You know, and in workers' comp with the on a constant basis, you know, the insurance companies, not a constant basis, but periodically your check might not show up on time.
Yeah, and in my cases, the anxiety seems to be heightened because, you know, they're not able to work. They're losing out in their paycheck to pay their, you know, car note, their mortgage, their rent, buy food, you know, things like that. And they're looking to replace that, and they want to replace that as quickly as possible because Absolutely. Most people don't, you know, save for those kinds of situations.
But it's right. And it can be a long and winding road. Contingency fee agreement. You talked about the amount of money that you guys invest in a client's case, and we know that. To me, every day I even think about this. It gives me goosebumps because when we talked about resources and having that resources to represent somebody in a catastrophic case, these things can last years. There's no way, talk about the contingency fee agreement and the fact that there's no out-of-pocket cost for your client. And that could be from not only from day one, but, you know, it could be a year, 6 months, a year, 2 years, as long as this goes. But in the meantime, even while you're vetting the case, you may be in investing in experts and all those things on behalf of the client.
Certainly. And a lot of what we do is investigate cases. So I may sign up a client, and it seems like it could be a case within sort of our area of expertise and has potential and value, but I don't know it until I'm talking to the right expert, till I get the police report, till I get the OSHA report, until I consult an expert. So for medical malpractice in particular, so a doctor, a nurse, a hospital, some sort of medical provider has acted beneath the standard of care. In order to bring that case in Pennsylvania, you need a certificate of merit, which means I need to have an expert in the field give a written opinion just to me. I don't provide it to the other side at first. Mm-hmm. That comes later in a case. But I need a written statement from an expert in the field that so-and-so defendant acted beneath the standard of care. And that must be filed with the court. I file a certificate of merit saying I have that statement when I file the complaint or within 60 days. So for any medical malpractice case,
that's before you even take the case, right?
Before you file, it requires an expert. An expert charges, obviously, sure. to review the case. It's their time, and they deserve to charge for it. This isn't, you know, pro bono. They have a job to do too, and it takes them time to review. Oftentimes, it could be hundreds, if not thousands, of pages of medical records. Same goes for other cases. Most of my, I mean, there are exceptions, but a lot of times, you know, we're consulting experts. It could be a construction accident case, and I'm consulting a former OSHA inspector, let's say, to look at a work site and let me know if there should have been fall protection for a guy who fell, you know, off a scaffolding. I think it, and I could put it together, but I'm going to need an expert in the case, so mm-hmm. I might as well confront that expert and consult with that expert up front rather than learn the hard way.
Get surprised.
Yeah, right. The hard way. So expert costs are important. These medical records or OSHA reports, all that takes time. Tracking down witnesses to an incident, because there's always going to be a he said, she said. Well, a lot of times incidents are unwitnessed. So the evidence is what we call circumstantial. You're trying to piece together what makes sense. Finding witnesses, former employees, people who aren't always the most cooperative. One, you got to locate them.
Right.
And two, you got to get them to want to talk to you. And three, you hope what they say is going to be helpful.
Sure.
Right? So all that takes time. My type of practice, there's a contingency nature to it, meaning we don't get paid by the hour. We don't have any flat fee arrangement. We assume all the risk. So that's why case selection is so important as a business model to my firm, and really all plaintiff lawyers. Because if you keep taking cases that don't, you know, pay dividends for your clients, then you as a firm aren't getting paid either. You might as well go out of business.
Right. Well, the thing is, and although no one, as we all know, can predict what a case is worth at the beginning, that you do have to be an expert enough to be able to figure out if there's anything in it for the client. In other words, you know, as a lawyer with ethics and somebody who's successful, I've heard many of the quality attorneys say, listen, when we vet a case, and clients are welcome to take it elsewhere, but we're not going to take a client case where only we're getting paid. Why would the clients go through something for 2.5 years for a minimal amount of recovery? And some cases may be that way. You may be, you know, so you guys have to be experts in a lot of areas so that you can at least, have an educated guest with all the experts and, I guess, experience in your law firm. Okay, bring everybody in the same room and say, is this going to be worth going the distance for the client? Are they going to recover? You have to know at least that much while you're vetting the case.
Sir, at the end of the day, that's why we do this. That's all that matters, at least in what I'm doing, what Sonny's doing. We need to get justice for our clients. So if I handle a case and it pays off, but the fee is being eaten up by the cost of the case and my firm's contingency fee, and the client's not left with that much, it wasn't worth it at all.
It's not a win.
Right. I'm not doing right by my client. And part of the reason why it's so important that we take these cases on a contingency nature and the client doesn't go out of pocket for costs or attorney fees up front is because a lot of these people don't have the money for that.
Right.
And if we didn't have this system, these lawsuits wouldn't be brought.
And the system also allows, anyone to hire the very best attorney.
That's right. Nobody. I mean, if as a workers' comp attorney, Sonny, and I've heard. I mean, we're very fortunate. At least I am to do radio with you because I hear so many good things. And Todd, the same with you and the firm. And so, having said that, let's not forget that when somebody gets hurt, they're now out of work. They could never afford great attorneys like yourselves. Mm-hmm. If they had to come out of pocket, which to me, you know, I wish I was here in the beginning when somebody was talking about the years.
Right.
The point is that contingency fee agreement, it gives opportunities to people who could never pay for it out of their pockets. Let's do this. We got about 15 minutes left, and I'd like to talk about so many cases we were talking about, and a fascinating, right.
Some of your headline grabbing.
Yeah, some of the notable cases that you guys have represented, because there's some big ones.
Yeah, sure. So you know, I'm sitting across from Sonny. A lot of times I'm thinking about cases because we've had the opportunity to work together on behalf of mutual clients over the years. And the synergy, the relationship that I have with a client could be the same injured worker that you represent. And we don't overstep each other. We each are serving a purpose, right?
Sure.
So the workers' comp, a lot of my cases are brought on behalf of injured workers. And Sonny and his firm will represent the injured worker in a no-fault kind of base structure to get you know, some indemnity payments for missed work and some medical coverage, right? But where I come in is through the workers' compensation cases, they can't get compensation for pain and suffering, for loss of enjoyment, for loss of consortium, right, if somebody's married and they're injured. So that's a lot of what I'm doing. So, for instance, I have cases right now. I'm just thinking what I worked on today, yesterday. A guy who was crushed, unfortunately, in the back of a dump truck. So that's a product liability case against the manufacturer of the dump truck. A lady who was badly burned from a spray can that emitted its contents and started a flash fire when the spray can was near a hot surface. And she was badly burned in a kitchen down while working down the shore. And so that's a case I've spent time with. A guy who was unfortunately crushed and paralyzed when he went through an edger machine in a lumber facility. We're looking into a potential defective products case there.
You mentioned before the show an Amazon.
Yeah, so Amazon is a case that's in suit now, so I'm going to be a little careful what I'm saying, but this is public. So I represent the family of a guy who was 50 years old, was on a what's called an electric bike. Yeah, so it's a bike with a motor, but he's basically riding his bike in the shoulder. This accident happened in Bucks County. And he was approaching an intersection with oncoming traffic in the same direction. He had the right of way. And the driver of a transit cargo van delivering Amazon packages made a left turn right in his path. And he went splat against the side of the van. And you could picture what happened.
Yeah.
And he unfortunately died at the scene.
Oh,
and
God.
When you think about Amazon, huge company, right? One of the biggest in the world, and certainly became bigger and bigger during the pandemic.
Sure.
When people are home getting their packages delivered, we're seeing these trucks on the roads all the time, these delivery drivers. And you know, look, they got to get from point A to point B and a million places in between. And when they drive, those drivers cut corners and aren't driving safely, the public, you know, pays the price.
Yeah, and one of the problems that I face with Amazon in the comp arena is they hire a lot of subcontractors. So you don't really know who you're going to file a claim against. Is it Amazon or is it, you know, one of the subs?
So worker classification issues. You wonder sometimes, you know, in that situation, Sonny. Do you ever get in a situation where you know a worker is misclassified, and then you have to actually fight it?
The bigger problem is my client doesn't know who his employer is.
Yeah.
You know, they think it's Amazon, but...
You have to find out at that point?
Oh, sure. I mean, you can't file a comp claim against Amazon if Amazon was not the employer.
Because he was actually working for a subcontractor
of Amazon.
Oh, okay.
Right. So his employer was actually the subcontractor, and the subcontractor, you know, did work for Amazon.
And so, I mean, I don't know how you do it, honestly. I'm really fortunate to be able to sit in these, you know, do these shows and you know.
Joe, I really do enjoy what I do. I mean, there is never a dull moment. There's always something new and different every day.
And when that phone rings, man, and when you're talking about a wrongful death, and I know you both have dealt with this, and your dispositions are, you know, really awesome, so that you know that when somebody comes, it's going to be compassion and all that. But I, you know, that's got to be a massive emotional impact on, I can only imagine on days, both years, when you get that call, okay, from a loved one of somebody who's passed away on that job, or that roofer that fell through, and now it's almost worse because they can't, in other words, they have to actually live through the rest of their life not being able to function and being, and I don't mean worse, and I mean, God bless them, I'm glad they're alive, but the point is, you get it, it's a catastrophic injury. That word can't be underestimated, okay? How do you deal with that emotionally yourself? I know you got a job to do and you're ultimate professionals, but my God, I mean, I would, coming home to the family after one of those meetings and being able to regroup, and then, by the way, you're going to talk to them again next week. How do you do that?
You know, I'm not sure there's a real trick to it, Joe. Like you said,
head over to the liquor store and just say, give me a bottle. I'm joking.
Yeah. Keeping in mind that no matter how bad you have it, somebody probably has it worse.
There you go.
I'm looking at autopsy photos police photos and, certain cases, these prison suicide cases, guys who were just so troubled in prison and, kill themselves. It got so bad that they said, I got to end my life. Or, innocent children who were just preyed on. Those are the worst. And I guess, it's gut-wrenching, it's emotional, but I try to stay even keeled. And like you said, I have a job to do, and I get the most satisfaction out of being the spokesperson for somebody who doesn't have the ability to speak for him or herself, either because they're not on this earth anymore or because they're incapacitated.
I mean, you think about it, I'd almost, Sonny, I might even have a worse time, and I know you guys are professionals, but because you're dealing with insurance companies that are their job is to fight you. And, being able to keep your composure, Todd, when you're in there and somebody's talking about, purely... I mean, they're blaming your client. Your client's no longer there. There's a family right there.
Or they're offering you some ludicrous settlement.
Right.
Which they know that you wouldn't take in 1,000 years.
Exactly. You ever take it personal to, and it's a loaded question, but I mean, you ever take it to the point where, you go outside the room to a loved one and say, don't worry about it, I got this. This is part of the game, but,
But inside my blood's boiling. Yeah. And, I give that person a piece of my mind behind the scenes. Yeah, that happens. Because, look, we said it before. Everybody has a job to do, right? So that insurance adjuster has somebody to report to. And they are testing us, too. They're testing our clients. Let's, throw a certain amount of money out there by way of a settlement offer. They know it's way under value. Mm-hmm. They're testing.
Sure.
Because ultimately, whether my case is settled, it's the client's decision. And I can make a recommendation to the client and tell them what I think based on my experience and knowledge of the case, but it's their call. And a lot of times, thankfully, I have clients who kind of defer to me and trust me and my firm. That's why they came to us. But they're the ultimate decision maker. And it's not my money. And it's not my life. I'm not going to the doctor. I don't need the future medical care, So insurance, they're testing, and not every plaintiff firm, again, coming back to the type of firm I'm with, has the wherewithal, the courage, the resources to take it to the end.
Yep,
so we call their bluff, just like you would, Sonny. Mm-hmm. We call their bluff. We'll see you in court. We'll see you at trial.
Insurance companies know that time is on their side. They also know that, your client's financial circumstance, is usually on their side because, they're injured, they're not able to earn what they made before. They are essentially waiting out the client.
And it's interesting. You made me think of when I was an iron worker. I probably told this buddy of mine named John O'Malley. John was 50 years old, 52 years old. We were working on a church in West Philly. Did I ever mention this to you?
No.
Okay. And I just remembered, and if you're listening right now, that this is why it's so important for you to get the right attorney. Okay. I was what you call bolting up on this job. It was a church. The steel was huge, though. Okay. And one of the guys connecting, working with putting the actual, it's like an erect, so you're putting up a a building, and the guys that are actually working with the crane. So they're putting it, the other guys bolt up. I was bolting up underneath. I was in a backup gang. Well, we were starting off, and I don't know what day of the week it was, but first piece in the morning, and they happen to be, it's a big job, and now all of a sudden, I'm right underneath it. I'm like, Joe, you're on top. You know, you got to move. You're right by my, I just got down with all my, everything. I'm like, all right, I get him. I walk over, and I'm standing next to the boss, and all of a sudden, you hear firecrackers. Okay, it sounds like pop, 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 pop. The crane operator picked up the piece in the middle of the building. Okay, these guys are working on the corner of the building in the street. And instead of bringing the piece up through the middle of the building so they could just get it, the crane operator brings it down the street. That, you know, he booms up. He has the beam. He booms over to the side of the street and brings it down like this. It hits the power lines. Okay. It hits the power lines. They arc. My buddy's 52 years old. He was actually substituting for a young buck who had athlete's foot and couldn't do it that day. And all of a sudden, my buddy bounced off. And we're up like 3-4 floors, but there was a core, concrete core. He bounces all the way down, hits the deck, and goes in. Right in the water. Blood was everywhere. Jeez. And here's the thing. The reason I brought that up is because I'm looking at you, Todd, and Sonny. You would have handled the workers' comp end of that situation. I know he would have been fine there. I don't know if he had a good what his legal situation was or if anybody represented him. And if he lost his arm. He didn't die. He lost his arm. And the hole in his glove was that big. The arc. It was like a dime. Okay? But somebody, if you don't get the right attorney, may just think it's a work injury and not get a third party situation there. Maybe there should have been coverings over those power lines or whatever by the gem. And right. And John, oh, by the way, could never work again. Okay. Right. That was the end.
So his life was completely altered that day. Obviously I only know some sparing facts, but you would think that's a case that hopefully somebody put together on his behalf, because even again, and it doesn't sound like he's to blame at all, but even if it's a situation where the injured person may bear some blame, provided it's not more than 50%, others need to answer for it. And it's critically important to speak with the right lawyer and in the right time frame, because there's a statute of limitations in
right.
Pennsylvania.
And I'm not quite sure.
And at these construction sites, if there is a separate entity that actually caused the injury, you could have two claims arising from that kind of accident. One against your employer for workers' compensation benefits, and another against that third party for personal injury damages, including pain and suffering. And that's where Todd's firm would come
in. And Sonny, as a workers' compensation firm premier, you get that case, you're looking at the whole thing.
I'm looking for that kind of thing. I mean, I'm looking to make sure that my client gets as whole as possible. So I'm not just looking for a workers' compensation case. I'm also looking for other things that might exist that I can assist that client with.
So we only have a couple minutes left, but talk about the importance of working together on these third-party cases and the importance of the communications and all those things.
Yeah, and as Todd knows, the workers' compensation case generally moves faster than the third-party case. So we're usually there at the involved in the case at the very beginning. We handle the client's medical needs, make sure that they're treating with the right physician. My case is moving faster than the personal injury case. So any transcripts, depositions, or hearing transcripts that might be generated as a result of the comp case are shared with Todd so that he can use those in his third party case.
Yeah, what Sonny does is invaluable. He mentioned the construction example. I can't sue the employer of that construction worker, but it could sue another subcontractor, the general contractor, the owner, the developer. Right. A big construction job, you have plenty of people.
And the importance of working with two pros. As much as we talk about communication with the client is so important, but also having two attorneys where it's automatic. You know you're going to get the reports. You know there's community. How important is that?
When Sonny calls me about a case, I'm already at first base. I'm not starting at home plate and having to run to first, because I know that he's done a lot of the legwork. He's in the initial line. Somebody's injured on the job. Their employer's getting them medical coverage. They need to find a workers' comp lawyer to protect them right then and there, and they're going to Sonny. And now Sonny's spotting the issues, as he said, which I appreciate. And I know he's going to have the injury fully investigated, maybe a deposition transcript, the medical records. It makes my job easier. A lot of what we're doing is looking at dangerous products. Somebody could get an arm severed in a workplace, in an industry, in a factory. Well, Sonny's going to handle, again, the comp. That doesn't exclude me from looking into a claim against the manufacturer.
Or the machine or whatever.
Yeah, exactly, absolutely. The machine for a defective product.
Sonny, and we only have a couple minutes left, maybe a minute and a half, but the importance of you with your client taking a work injury individual and sending it to a firm, the confidence you have to have in that firm, because that reflects on you, got to be an important part of the process.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you refer a client to another lawyer and if there's an issue, they're going to call you as opposed to calling the attorney that you referred the case to, because it is a reflection on you. And I obviously don't have to worry about that when I refer clients to Todd's firm.
So, Sonny, if you will, could I borrow that piece of paper
absolutely,
one more time?
Absolutely, Joe, because we want to hear you say
Thank
the firm
you.
Name
did it
again.
So well.
Although Todd got to say the abbreviated form, I'll go with it. First of all, Todd, contact information for yourself at the firm.
Sure. So my phone number is 215-546-6636, and my email is Todd, T-O-D-D, at erlegal.com.
Awesome. And Sonny, yours?
Banks Law, 215-561-1000, and our web address is www.bankslaw.com. Our website is brand new. Please check it out.
Awesome. All right, I want to thank everybody for tuning into the Pain and Wellness Hour with Sonny Banks. We want to thank Todd Schoenhaus of Eisenberg, Rothweiler, Winkler, Eisenberg, and Jack. Was that good?
All done. Right. We're clapping for you.
In nice Iron job. Workers Apprentice School, we didn't have to. They just weren't that long.
My partners are happy.
Thank you. For a great show, Todd. Always a pleasure to have you on the broadcast. And, of course, our host, Sonny Banks, fantastic broadcast. And as well as our sponsor, Tony Shuler, Pinnacle Medical Plus. And, of course, Andrew Walker, who makes it all happen. I rib him because we have fun, but couldn't do it without him. On behalf of everyone on the panel, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Pinnacle Medical Plus is a full-service urine toxicology and durable medical equipment company serving patients throughout the continental United States. With over 25 years of industry experience, the professionals at Pinnacle Medical Plus provide high-quality services and products combined with excellent service at a reasonable price. On the urine toxicology side, Pinnacle is a trusted partner that provides the most up-to-date therapeutic drug monitoring technology. On the DME side, Pinnacle offers an extensive list of premium products along with priority delivery services. At Pinnacle Medical Plus, their number one goal is making sure their customers and patients receive the quality care and services they deserve. Contact Pinnacle Medical Plus for all of your urine toxicology and durable medical equipment needs at 888-396-8644 or online at www.pinnaclemedicalplus.com.